United Nations has launched a global effort to establish a one-world religion, as revealed by this CBN report.
Many liberal organizations, including the United Nations, are pursuing the development of a one-world religious organization. Today, on the United Nations 55th anniversary, CBN News reporter Wendy Griffith takes a look at what's behind this push for a global religious voice.
After a while, the drums, chants, and prayers representing many of the world's leading religions all started to sound alike, somehow losing their flavor in a melting pot of spiritual soup. The first ever Millennium World Peace Summit of religious and spiritual leaders took place at the United Nations in August, and some believe it marked the first major step toward a movement to usher in a global spiritual body that may one day speak for all religions. Robert McGinnis with the Family Research Council says it appears the hidden agenda is to unite people under one religious organization so they will peacefully accept UN goals such as population control, abortion rights, and one world government.
Instead of all these different gods, maybe there's one God who manifests himself and revealed himself in different ways to different people. You know, what about that, huh?
CNN founder and billionaire Ted Turner was the honorary chair of the World Religion Summit. Turner, known for his critical views on biblical Christianity, promoted the New Age concept that there are many ways to heaven.
The thing that disturbed me is that my religious Christian sect was very intolerant, not intolerant of religious freedom for other people, but they thought that we were the only ones going to heaven.
Supporters of a global religious voice have come down hard on evangelical Christians who refuse to adopt their New Age agenda.
Although the URI says it is not a religion, critics say it does preach a theology that teaches acceptance and diversity among all faiths. Those who push for a global religious organization believe that all religions, while different on the surface, are each valid pathways to God.
Argue that the chief influence behind the United Nations is an organization known as the Theosophical Society, considered by some to be the most powerful occult organization in the modern world.
The Theosophical Society has had more influence on the United Nations than any other religious society, whether you would call it Christian or occult.
The House of Theosophy, as it is called, was founded by a woman known as Madame H.P. Blavatsky.
Madame Blavatsky was a mystic, and she had truly supernatural powers. She had a tremendous impact on people, and was able to recruit many of the world's leading people into her organization, people like Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote the great stories about Sherlock Holmes. Thomas Edison was one of her disciples, as was William Stead, who was one of the four original members of the secret society Cecil Rhodes created, which became the Council on Foreign Relations. Many key people, you know, in the 19th century joined Theosophy, as in the 20th century, Margaret Sanger and Adolf Hitler were disciples of Theosophy, as are people like Robert Mueller, for many years, was the Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations, because the major driving force behind the idea of the United Nations and world government is the occult.
In 1888, Blavatsky published her now famous work, The Secret Doctrine, a book revered by occult practitioners all over the world. Adolf Hitler reportedly slept with a copy of this book at his bedside. Blavatsky subtitled the work, The Synthesis of Science, Religion, and Philosophy. The Secret Doctrine is filled with ancient mystery wisdom that more than a century later continues to hold New Age readers spellbound.
There's no way that a girl with a sixth or seventh grade education could possibly have written this. Of these volumes were channeled to her by a demonic spirit she called Kut Humi, and she actually traveled to Tibet, to India, and she claims that she actually went to Tibet and actually met her master there.
Kut Humi is the name given to a Tibetan spirit master who was Blavatsky's teacher in her lifetime. Blavatsky is pictured here with some of the masters or spirit beings she communed with and admired. Kut Humi, El Moria, and Saint Germain. Under the mysterious orders of such spirits, Blavatsky's mission was to bring a philosophical understanding to unexplained phenomena, such as the mysterious rappings and other spirit communication that had been occurring in the West. Blavatsky maintained that spiritualistic phenomena without the philosophy of occultism were dangerous and misleading. For this apparent reason, the spirit beings directly commanded Blavatsky to begin the Theosophical Society. The official website of the society in Adyar, India, says that the Theosophical Society may be said to have begun when H.P. Blavatsky, under orders of the Masters, returned from India in 1871 to found an organization through which the West and the world in general would be instructed in true spirituality. The official birthday of the society came 4 years later in 1875, with a formal declaration from Henry S. Alcott, the president and co-founder of the organization. Blavatsky's House of Theosophy would formalize what began as the New Thought Movement into a religious system that would dramatically change the Western view of God and his relationship to mankind. While early America recognized the gospel of Jesus Christ as the only path to salvation, theosophical teachings argued for the essential oneness of all religions and the omnipresence of divine spirit. Theosophy declares that it was formed upon the basis of a universal brotherhood of humanity. Yet Blavatsky would teach far more than a universal brotherhood. She would take the New Thought movement to the next dimension, fully exposing the source of its power in her voluminous writings.
These volumes were channeled to her, and they're very, very complex, they're very erudite, but if you read them, you'll find out that she has rejected the God of the Bible and embraced Lucifer. And she's quite open about that.
She did emphasize Satan as being the true God, and Satan beckoning Adam and Eve to partake of the fruit. He was really turning them on to true godhood, and he's the one who really freed the human race in Blavatsky's teaching.
According to Blavatsky, Satan was in fact God, while Jehovah, the God of the Bible, was the real devil and enemy of mankind. Blavatsky wrote that the appellation Satan belongs by right to the first and cruelest adversary of all other gods, Jehovah, not to the serpent, which spoke only words of sympathy and wisdom. Elsewhere, she writes that Satan, the serpent of Genesis, is the real creator and benefactor, the father of spiritual mankind, for it is he who opened the eyes of the automaton Adam, created by Jehovah. In The Secret Doctrine, she says, in antiquity and reality, Lucifer or Luciferus is the name of the angelic entity presiding over the light of truth as over the light of the day. Lucifer is divine and terrestrial light, the Holy Ghost and Satan at one and the same time. And now it stands proven, she says, that Satan or the red fiery dragon, the Lord of Phosphorus, and Lucifer, or Light-Bearer, is in us. It is our mind, our tempter and redeemer, our intelligent liberator and savior from pure animalism.
It were demons that channeled her writings to her. Of course, she wrote about world government, the importance of world government, and the idea that mankind, at least Western civilization, began with the Aryan, and the Aryan came out of Tibet. And of course, if you've ever read anything about Adolf Hitler and Heinrich Himmler, why, they actually sent expeditions to Tibet looking for the origins of Aryan man. And there were strong ties between the SS and this whole idea of this Superman that they were trying to create and the writings of Madame Blavatsky. The entire basis of the Nazi movement was founded on theosophy and her writings. And of course, the symbol that she used, the swastika, is what Adolf Hitler used as the symbol of the Nazi movement. But the average individual does not understand the relationships between Madame Blavatsky's writing and her worship of Lucifer and her accessing the other dimensions and what happened in Germany under Adolf Hitler.
Time magazine did a whole thing on the New Age movement with, you know, with crystals and, you know, talking about all the different New Age phenomena that became very popular in the 80s and is still with us to this day. And Shirley MacLaine was on the front cover holding the crystals. And in that piece, they talked about, in the introduction to that piece, at the beginning of the magazine, they talked about how we don't know where the term New Age came from or where it's going. Well, the Bible tells us, Jesus said in the last days there would be this false, you know, this religious movement, which would be saying the time draws near, which would be predicting a new age, and which would have its basis in satanic or false miracles, which is what the New Age movement's all about. So we know where it's going.
In 1904, a man named Aleister Crowley channeled a spirit who inspired a series of writings known as the Book of the Law. According to the introduction of the work, the book was dictated in Cairo, Egypt, between noon and 1 p.m. on three successive days. The author, a demonic spirit, called himself Iwas and claimed to be a messenger from the forces ruling this earth at present. This description is quite revealing, since Jesus referred to Satan as the prince or ruler of this world. Satan is also called the god of this world by the Apostle Paul. In this Book of the Law, Crowley set down the chief principle for what he called the new eon. He wrote, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. There is no law beyond do what thou wilt." This declaration is in contrast to the example of Christ in the Bible. In the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus prayed, "Father, not as I will, but as thou wilt," in obedience to God. But in the Book of the Law, Crowley turns the tables and teaches men, not as God wills, but rather, "Do what thou wilt." This promotion of self-will that so often leads to self-empowerment is perhaps the climax of man's desire to be his own God, to rule over himself rather than live in obedience to the God who created him. Jesus said, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it." Having thoroughly rejected the gospel of Jesus Christ, Aleister Crowley would earn the title of the wickedest man in the world by the London newspapers. The British media exposed his bizarre satanic rituals at the mysterious Abbey Thelema in Sicily. On one occasion, a man named Raoul Loveday died from drinking poisoned cat's blood at Crowley's command. Loveday's widow returned to London and exposed Crowley's wicked behavior to the world. When he was a child, Crowley's own mother referred to him as the Beast. According to Crowley researcher James W. Rivack, he quickly identified with the title, and for the rest of his life, he viewed himself as the Beast of the Apocalypse, the enemy of Christianity. Like all New Age adherents, past and present, Crowley revered the serpent's lie from the Garden of Eden. He wrote, "This serpent, Satan, is not the enemy of man, but he who made gods of our race, knowing good and evil. He bade know thyself and taught initiation." Through the 20th century, the influence of this black magician and professing Satanist upon popular culture has compelled some researchers to consider him the real father of the modern New Age movement.
Well, he's basically not only the father of modern Satanism and the most highly regarded Satanist of the last century, he is also the father of the modern New Age movement, which is extensive around the Western world today. I won't say he single-handedly ushered in the New Age movement, but he, more so than any other human being, was instrumental in the popularization of the New Age movement. Altered states of consciousness, trying to make altered states of consciousness scientific, through whether it be hallucinogens and seeing reality different, and using the comparisons of a microscope and looking into a different reality on a spiritual level, whether it was drugs, whether it was astrology or the practice of ritual magic, whether it was sex magic, whether it was his ideas of world unity through magic and so forth, all these are very popular through the 1960s and after that in ushering in what today is called the New Age movement. But he was very, very powerful as far as, I mean, more so than anybody. Satanists will admit that Aleister Crowley was, you know, the Satanist of the 20th century. Anton LaVey on the Church of Satan, which was more notorious than Aleister Crowley's group, was simply pop Satanism to many serious Satanists.
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Shem Ham Farash!
Shem Ham Farash!
Hail Satan!
And even Anton LaVey's group, I mean, Anton LaVey's library was chock full of Aleister Crowley's books. The co-founder of the Church of Satan with Anton LaVey, Kenneth Anger, was an avowed Satanist who was a follower of Aleister Crowley. And many of his works, Invocation to My Demon Brother, Lucifer Rising, and so forth, videos that he made in the late 60s extolling Satanism were all about Aleister Crowley unveiling a, you know, a picture of Crowley and that's worshipped and so forth. In regard to Satanism, his name comes up over and over again in satanic music and so forth. But even more importantly, in regard to the New Age movement, in the early 1900s, Aleister Crowley was talking about the new eon. Ionis is a Greek word for age, and the new eon being the new age. And what's interesting about Crowley's emphasis on the New Age, it had everything to do with what became popular in the 1960s.
In his shocking 10-hour documentary, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, Pastor Joe Schimmel exposes the role of music in furthering the New Age through the 1960s counterculture movement and reveals Aleister Crowley as the patron saint of rock musicians.
I can't think of any other occultist who's been more influential on rock musicians than Aleister Crowley. No one close. London Times called Crowley the unsung hero of the 1960s. In fact, if you look at the 1960s counterculture leaders, John Lennon, he said his whole philosophy was, and he quoting Aleister Crowley's axiom, do what thou wilt, was the whole Beatles philosophy, he said in his interviews before his death was do what thou wilt. And they put their heroes up on Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album, and who did they place there? Aleister Crowley. In fact, that whole album, as we show in our rockumentary, was basically a tribute to Crowley's New Eon, along with their Satanic Majesty's Request by the Stones that the Beatles put out with Sgt. Pepper. In fact, we make a really clear case for Sgt. Pepper being Crowley. In fact, Crowley died 20 years before that album came out. And, of course, the song 20 Years Ago Today, Sgt. Pepper taught the band to play. It's quite interesting because not only was Lennon and the Beatles into Aleister Crowley, but we show the Rolling Stones and how they were into Crowley, and Mick Jagger and Keith Richards helping out with even Kenneth Anger's movies, pushing Aleister Crowley's Satanism in Lucifer Rising and so forth. So you have the Stones, you have the Beatles, the two biggest rock bands of the 1960s. You have Jim Morrison with a bust of Aleister Crowley, the biggest American rock idol of the 60s on his album 13. We can go on and on. Led Zeppelin, the biggest band of the 1970s. Jimmy Page buying Aleister Crowley's mansion overlooking Loch Ness, being full on into Aleister Crowley, using implements of his temple on the Presence album on the front cover, as Crowley talked about in his books on ritual magic, and even down to his symbol, Zoso, Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin, which is really soul spelled forward and soul spelled backwards of the solar god. Soul was S-O-L, the god of, or Satan, in Crowley's books. It was another symbol of Satan, S-O-L. And that was Jimmy Page's occult symbol that he used that nobody could decipher. And recently in Rolling Stone magazine interview in 2002, they all came out and said what their symbol meant, except Page still wouldn't come out and say what his meant. But Crowley said to write backwards and forward. If you look at that symbol closely, it's soul, forward and backwards. So that's still not known to even the rock world what that symbol was, but Jimmy Page has admitted being an admirer of Crowley, practicing Crowley's magic for power and so forth, and they became very powerful. These bands sold their soul for rock and roll, so to speak.
Yeah.
opening song, performed by Crowley disciple Ozzy Osbourne, is said to reveal perhaps the darkest side of the New Age. In the latter half of the song, listen as Osbourne calls upon Crowley, known as the Great Beast, to ride his white horse. Schimmel and others believe this to be symbolic of the coming Antichrist, known as the first horseman of the apocalypse. In the book of Revelation we read, "And I saw, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer." In his writings, Aleister Crowley would refer to Antichrist as the crowned and conquering child, the Lord of the Aeon. Standing with their backs to the wall is a key phrase in this song. Some researchers believe it denotes the mass murder of those who refuse to worship the New Age Christ. Standing with their backs to the wall, awaiting execution.
And ultimately, that's where all this is leading. I mean, it's all about peace and love on the outside. When it all comes down, there's going to be a brutal leader that will emerge, who Crowley was forthright enough to talk about in his books, and talk about this bloodbath that would come when Christians would be put to death in the establishment of the New World Order.
But is this merely the radical view of a drug-crazed Satanist like Aleister Crowley? Or is there, as many suggest, a global effort at work? We remind the viewer that the 20th century is without question the bloodiest in man's history. Some 170 million lives were lost to Nazism, communism, and the various killing fields of the world because of the darkness in the hearts of men. The Bible warns that the heart of man is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, including murder. Next, we turn to the town of Elberton, Georgia, the granite capital of the world. Elberton is famous for its production of tombstones, exporting some 250,000 tombstones every year. Oddly enough, the town that makes a living through death is also the home of what some consider the most threatening monument in America. A monument that some believe is a symbol for the coming Holocaust, promoting a depopulation effort at a massive scale.
It was back in 1979 when a stranger came to Elberton, Georgia. Now, Elberton, Georgia is on the eastern part of Georgia, very close to the South Carolina border. And this stranger said that he was part of a secret group, and they wanted to build a great granite monument.
This was done by a guy who gave a pseudonym, came in, paid cash, had this company set these things up in 1980. Called himself R.C. Christian, but that's not his real name. It says it right on the stones, a pseudonym.
Nobody knows his real name, because that isn't his real name. Nobody knows who put the money up other than this fictional individual. Nobody knows what secret group he represents. Of course, Elberton mines granite. They make tombstones there, and they have the facilities to mine the granite. But he gave very, very specific directions as to how this was to be built, so that it would always be aligned in certain ways, so you'd always be able to see the North Star, so it would be aligned with the moon and with the various phases of the sun. And very, very similar to the Stonehenge that they have in England. So the Stonehenge was a Druidic monument. This was to be the American Stonehenge, or it's known as the Georgia Guidestones. And on each one of the Guidestones is this message in a different language, actually eight different languages. Are the Ten Commandments that come from the dark side. And the first one is maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature, which doesn't sound too bad until you realize that we've got over 6 billion people in the world. And if we're going to maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature, we're going to have to kill off about 90% or more of the world's population.
I went there and looked at those things and said, now, hold on a minute. Today's population is 6 billion. They want to maintain humanity under 1.5 billion. Looks like a lot of people got to die for their plan to work, which is, by the way, the plan. Jacques Cousteau said we'd have to eliminate 350,000 people a day. A third of 1 million people a day would have to be eliminated to save Mother Earth. Now, Bill Clinton said we need to reduce the population of the Earth to 1 billion. There are a lot of folks who would like to reduce the population of the Earth.
Aleister Crowley taught that a global massacre would be necessary to bring about the New Age. He wrote, "There is a magical operation of maximum importance, the initiation of a new eon. When it becomes necessary to utter a word, the whole planet must be bathed in blood. Before man is ready to accept the law of Thelema, or will, the great war must be fought. This bloody sacrifice is the critical point of the world ceremony of the crowned and conquering child as Lord of the Aeon. This initiation takes place to remove Christians, who are considered the primary obstacle to world unity under Antichrist." A magazine called the Omega Letter says that there is only one obstacle to world unity, Christianity. It goes on to say that Christianity claims supernatural knowledge and divine revelation, and therefore should not be tolerated. Gus Hall, the former leader of the Communist Party in America, said, "I dream of a time when the last congressman is strangled to death on the guts of the last preacher. And since the Christians love to sing about the blood, why not give them a little of it?" A New Age group calling itself Solar Questers writes, "These are wondrous times because the world has gone through this terrific experience as it spins slowly back to its rightful orbit in the position that it should be in the heavens. And as this happens more and more, more comfort and well-being will come upon this world, and those who hinder will be removed, liquidated. They must be wiped clean off the face of the earth." Ruth Montgomery, sometimes referred to as the Herald of the New Age, said, "Millions will survive and millions won't. Those who won't will go into the spirit state because there is truly no death." The authors of a New Age pamphlet titled Cosmic Countdown claim to have received messages from a higher intelligence. The pamphlet says the world should be forewarned to be on the lookout for the decimation of populations. These peoples will eventually be replaced by the new root race about to make its appearance in a newly cleansed world. But perhaps the most disturbing comments come from New Age author Barbara Marx Hubbard. Researchers John Ankerberg and John Weldon report that due to her vast financial wealth and influence among leading world politicians and industrialists, she is having a major impact behind the scenes. She has been influenced by spirits for almost 2 decades. In her book titled Happy Birthday Planet Earth, Hubbard wrote, "The choice is, do you wish to become a natural Christ, a universal human, or do you wish to die? People will either change or die," she says. "That is the choice." Hubbard says, "There have always been defective seeds. In the past, they were permitted to die a natural death. We, the elders, have been patiently waiting to take action to cut out this corrupted and corrupting element in the body of humanity." Hubbard's spirit guides gave her a vision of things to come. They told her that out of the full spectrum of human personality, 1/4 is electing to transcend, 1/4 is destructive, and they are defective seeds. Now, as we approach the quantum shift from the creature human to the co-creative human, the human who is the inheritor of godlike power, the destructive 1/4 must be eliminated from the social body. Fortunately, you are not responsible for this act. We are. We are in charge of God's selection process for planet Earth. He selects, we destroy. We are the riders of the pale horse, death.